Welcome to Africa LSV Podcast, the monthly podcast for language services in Africa, where we cover trends, translation, interpretation, localization, and language industry in general. This podcast is presented by Bilingual Communications and Media Council and hosted by the wonderful Adina Maran Koulibaly. If you want to give your feedback or featured on the podcast, just send us an email at the address info@bilingualconsult.com.
Hi, and welcome to the first episode of Africa's LSP podcast for 2022. This is our second season, and as we promised this year, we are focusing only on African languages, and we're going to have great conversations with experts in this field. So my guest for this episode of the podcast is Mr. Paul Warambo. He's a Kiswahili translator and editor with a lot of experience with the language. Mr. Paul Warambo, you're welcome to Africa's LSP podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Adi. I'm happy to be in this podcast today. My name is Mr. Paul Warambo, as Adi has just said, and I am a Kiswahili translator. I've been a reviser, I've been a quality assurance. I've been working with Translators Without Borders for 7 years now. I've been working in different capacities. I started as a junior translator, rising into senior translator, into reviser, editor, and quality assurance. Just to give a bit more background to that is that I joined Translators Without Borders in the year 2013, thereabout. And Translators Without Borders is now Clear Global, just to capture the breadth and the growth that has happened over the last couple of years. Jina langu ni Paul Warambo, na mimi ni mtafsiri wa lugha ya Kiswahili. Nimekuwa nikifanya kazi na shirika la Translators Without Borders kama mtafsiri, mhariri na katika miaka mingi iliyopita, lakini kufikia sasa ni miaka kama 7 hivi. I'm based in Nairobi, Kenya, where I schooled and where I also work, but I've also traveled across the world in different parts, just, you know, studying how translations are done in different parts of the world, in Europe especially, and gaining experience in how to use different technology in translation and to improve translation in Kiswahili. So thank you so much, Adi. I hope that introduction suffices for now.
It was perfect, especially when you introduced yourself again in Kiswahili. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to hear.
So Kiswahili is a very well-known language on the African continent. It's very popular, and there are so many things that we can learn about it. And for me, I'm really excited to have you here. So I wanted to start with the history behind the language. We can talk about its origin and the part of the continent, but also if it's spoken beyond Africa too, you can let us know.
Thank you. Yes, so Swahili, which is also referred to as Kiswahili in its local form, originated from the east coast of Africa, you know, at a place that's around Sebaki River. This particular place is called Shungwaya. It's in the east coast of Africa. Kiswahili is classified as a Bantu language within the Bantu language family. And so alongside other Bantu languages, Kiswahili is one of them and a major one for that matter. From its original place, the language spread rapidly, from the coastal towns of Kenya, Tanzania, and Zanzibar, you know, to the hinterland, where it continued to spread due to, you know, activities related to trade, migration, politics, education, and general human interaction. You know, today, you know, as we speak, Adi, Kiswahili is spoken all over the world, but mostly in the East and Central Africa, where it is an important lingua franca, you know, a language that has spread widely and a language that people use in their daily interaction in business, politics, and education. But important to also mention at this point is that Kiswahili is used in Kenya, you know, and as a matter of constitutional declaration, a national and official language. In Tanzania, it is both official and national language, while in Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and down south, it is one of the languages of communication in everyday interaction. So Kiswahili, you know, from its original place, has now spread its tentacles to different regions of Africa and beyond. It will surprise you, Adi, that as we speak now, Kiswahili is being taught and spoken in, you know, universities in Europe, in Asia, and even in India as we speak now. I have had, you know, classmates and people who we school together with who have been employed in overseas university as, you know, Kiswahili tutors and as translators, because some of the content that would need that these universities will need needs to be translated, you know, for that particular purpose. So Kiswahili has spread far and wide beyond anyone's imagination. Just from a simple place in the East Coast of Africa, now to the, you know, different parts of the world.
And it's a language that it is, you know, Swahili is among the 10 most widely spoken languages in the world with more than 200 million speakers. And so I'm just wondering what makes it so appealing or attractive?
Yes, thank you. You know, just as you have said rightly, you know, it's one of the most widely spoken languages now in the world as we speak. And it is estimated that over 150 million people, you know, speak this world in Africa and beyond. It is one of the working, the reason for that is because it is one of the working languages of different institutions, such as the African Union, the East African Community. It is one of the languages that, you know, is also rich in its culture and vocabulary and growth. And because it is used in different spheres of life, you know, in the social media, in the marketplace, in business, it's appealing because anyone who wants to access some of these, you know, places in Africa and different regions of Africa, if you want to, you know, get penetration of goods and services and products, you are thinking about ensuring that you localize some of these products and services in Kiswahili. So the reason it has spread and the reason it has become a language that is, you know, loved by many people is because of its wider reach across the globe. And you can reach people who went to school and those who also did not go to school, because you don't need to go to school to learn Kiswahili. You simply need to interact in the marketplaces, to interact with people across the borders, and you will learn this particular language. As opposed to the colonial languages that we only learned in school, you know, if you never went to school, it would have been very difficult for you to learn English or French or Portuguese, but you just need to interact with people in the marketplace and different gatherings and learn Swahili because it is the language of the general population. I hope I answered you, Adi.
Perfectly. And then I like the point you made about it being spoken all over. And so I'm just wondering, if it's spoken all over, then what are the varieties of the language? And as it is expanding to different, you know, countries of the continent, definitely they would speak it in a different way, or they would have their own varieties of the language. How does that play out?
Excellent. Thank you. Yes. So despite the basic uniformity of written Kiswahili, there are at least 3 mutually intelligible variants. You can call them dialects. Now, there is the dialect spoken in Kenya, which is usually referred to as the Kenyan Swahili. You know, it is popularly referred to as classical in the academic circles, but really it's just the Kenyan Swahili, the Swahili dialect that is spoken in the majority of towns in Kenya. It is taught in both primary and secondary schools as a compulsory subject and used in print and broadcast media by both Kenyan and international news outlets. That's the first variety. The second variety or dialect is the Tanzanian dialect. This is spoken in Tanzania and Zanzibar, where it is used as both official and national language and considered really the formal variety, you know, the formal variety. The Kenyan and the Tanzanian Swahili together are also grouped as one variety called the coastal Swahili. And this is done to distinguish these two varieties from other varieties such as the Congolese Swahili and the non-native Swahili and Sheng, which I will explain a little bit. Now, when you hear people talk about the coastal Swahili, they are referring to the dialect that is spoken in Kenya and in Tanzania because they are really very close and they are used in books, they are used in schools, and it is used in the East African community, which is a regional bloc that brings together the countries of East Africa. Now, the Congolese Swahili is spoken in the Democratic Republic of Congo and spreads through to Burundi. It is kind of distinct because it has borrowed vocabulary heavily from French and the Congolese local languages like Lingala. And then we have the non-native variety that is usually spoken in Uganda, Rwanda, Somali, particularly among people who have not received much or any formal education in Kiswahili, you know. And this non-native Swahili is substantially different from the formal or the standard Swahili that is spoken in Kenya and in Tanzania, which together form the coastal Swahili. I want to speak a little bit about Sheng variety. Okay, the Sheng variety is a variety that is spoken majorly by the youth in the informal settlements in towns such as Nairobi, Dar es Salaam, Mombasa, Kisumu, different towns that the youth tend to congregate in search of, you know, opportunities for jobs and, you know, just to make their lives a little bit better. Now, this Sheng variety is sweeping across major towns. In fact, if you want to reach a critical mass of the young middle class, then you want to speak to them in Sheng variety. It is a simplified variety in terms of grammar and vocabulary. It is a variety that does not stick to the norms of, you know, the very requirements of grammar and syntax. So it's kind of a variety that is preferred by young people. And therefore, you will find that in advertisements that target the youth, they use the Sheng variety. In the entertainment industry, if you want to dub a youth movie or you want to subtitle a youth song, then you are going to be, you know, preferably using the Sheng variety. And this is because of the wider spread that this language has. Usually when a language spreads this widely, it is inevitable to avoid, you know, variations and variants that, you know, go with these different demographics. Thank you, Adi.
Yes, so interesting point there. For the Sheng variety you spoke about, it reminds me of a conversation I had with a translator in Zimbabwe, and he was talking about Shona and explaining that there is a simplified version of Shona which is spoken by the youth on social media, and he feels that it is a bit diluting the language. He's not happy about it because he feels like being a translator, you know, he's able to use the appropriate or the official writing, you know, system for Shona, but he sees it being a bit diluted. So I don't know what your perspective on that. Do you think that the Sheng variety is something that we should encourage, or it's just something that is unavoidable?
Yeah, thank you so much. And I like the illustration you have given for the Shona. Now, there is that feeling usually among linguists whenever this youth variety emerges, such as the Sheng. And I think it's a phenomenon that happens across different languages, that you get a certain group of youth tending to simplify the language that they speak. And therefore, there is tend to be an emergence of a simplified version that tends to dilute the official variety. Now, that is true. And there are many different ways to look at it and different points of view to look at it. Now, as a translator, and as from my experience with translating into Kiswahili, I have often come across, you know, people who tend to think, well, probably as a translator, you need to think about the kind of audience you're reaching, okay? The purpose for this translation. If the purpose for a particular translation is to inform or to rally a certain group of people, such as the youth, to take up things like, you know, vaccinations or you know, take care of different public health needs, then it is okay to do a translation that reflects or that resonates with that kind of audience. And therefore, Sheng may suffice as a communicative tool. If you are translating for a formal publication or education material or something that needs to come out reflecting a brand of an organization, a company, or a government, then you are most likely going to use the official variety, because the style and the appeal needs and the tone needs to reflect the style and the appeal and the tone of that organization or that official establishment. So I tend to look at Sheng positively because it is an inevitable, you know, language phenomenon in East Africa. And I know that the feeling among linguists is that let's not encourage this Sheng. Let's wish it away. Let's not, you know, but then it sticks with us. It is here with us. The youth use it in advertisements. For example, I see in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, I see whenever they want a certain a product or a certain service to be received by the youth, they incorporate Sheng phrases and Sheng constructions. Why do they do that? Because they want to reach a particular demographic of people. But if it is about education and teaching grammar and, you know, teaching subjects in school, then they stick to the official variety of Kiswahili. And that is how I've always viewed this. It's a challenge, but I like to see it as an opportunity for growth for both translators and growing these particular languages.
Right. So I want us to talk about translation and localization for Kiswahili. I have learned that with Kiswahili, there is very little challenge when it comes to terminology and concepts, be it in pharmaceuticals, in the legal industry, with legal terminology or with science, for instance. So what explains that? And has there been deliberate effort to ensure that we have a lot of terminology in Kiswahili? And is it the result of some projects or initiatives?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Adi. Yes. So Kiswahili, over the years and over the decades, has grown in its vocabulary and its usage. And because of that, it has embraced the growth in different domains, such as, you know, pharmaceutical health science, general medical terminology, legal science and technology, marketing, entertainment, arts and literature. It has immensely grown. And it has also grown because of interaction with other languages that are used as lingua franca. Alongside Kiswahili, you know, so talk about English, interacting with English, talk about interacting with French, talk about interacting with Portuguese, German. Because of that, Kiswahili has constantly grown. However, it has taken some deliberate efforts by different institutions and establishments, which I'll mention in a few minutes, to do this. For example, You know that in the initial phase of the Kiswahili growth, you know, in the 1930s, when Kiswahili was being standardized so that it can be used in the school system and in the politics of the time, there was the Interterritorial Language Committee that was set, you know, to be able to come up with terminology for concepts that did not exist at the time. Now, that language committee did its work, and then came another institution which was called the Taasisi ya Uchunguzi wa Kiswahili, you know, Institute of Kiswahili Research, which was based at the Dar es Salaam University in Tanzania, and having its chapters in Kenya and Uganda. Now, this research institute did a lot of research in researching on terminology and growing that terminology and developing bilingual dictionaries and technical dictionaries that then translators can use and language teachers can use and people of any interest could use, including some of the embassies and high commissions. Then other institutions have come up in Kenya and Tanzania. So currently we have the Baraza la Kitaifa la Kiswahili, which is a regional body that is meant to research on terminology, on science and pharmaceuticals, medical, legals, marketing and entertainment, in different domains. So as this research continues, a lot of glossaries are also being built. A lot of books are also being written. And so there is dissemination of terminology across the region that uses Kiswahili. And then we have different professionals, translators and professors in universities that continue to do research and continue to populate certain online resources, bilingual resources that Kiswahili translators can actually, get and use. Adi, it will shock you that there are several bilingual dictionaries, digital and published in terms of books and articles that people can refer to and use as resources when doing translation. And this has contributed immensely in doing this. But we also have a critical player in this, and this is the media, the mass media and the social media. You know, Kiswahili is so popular such that it has been used in both mainstream or traditional media, as they call it, and the social media. So we have, you know, media, international media outlets such as the BBC, you know, Radio China and Deutsche Welle that have continued to, you know, hold discussions and present their news items in Kiswahili. And so for the emerging concepts, we've always found a way of, you know, disseminating it either through the use of the traditional media or social media, because the youth uses a lot of Kiswahili in the social media, Facebook pages, so many Facebook pages that are, you know, are conversations are taking place in Kiswahili. We also have Kiswahili groups in social media and in LinkedIn that, you know, people use to channel, you know, their concerns about Kiswahili. If there is any new developments in the world that, you know, people are grappling with how to call them in Kiswahili, people continue to converse around this. I'll give you an example, the COVID-19 pandemic, Adi. So when the COVID-19 pandemic hit us, there was, we were thrown at us, you know. So people are talking about social distancing, self-quarantine, and many, many, many other things. So when you talk about social distancing in the concept, in the Swahili-speaking world, the Swahili-speaking world is a social world. People interact. People live in community and live together. So the very idea around social distancing is a foreign idea, because we don't social distance. We actually come together. We congregate together. There is affinity to come together. So we were grappling and saying, how do we then talk about social distancing in a community that is communal You know, and so this matters came up, and people discussed around this. This matter went to the national and regional institutions that research on Swahili, and within no time, we had concepts about, you know, social distancing, quarantining, and the entire COVID scenario and situation. And then, of course, there was standardization, and then media dissemination. So, because of these contributions of different stakeholders and different institutions and players, Kiswahili has continued to grow and enrich itself in vocabulary and concept in a way that it is no longer a big challenge if you want to translate from French or from English into Kiswahili for concepts that are probably foreign and alien. You would probably have a way of describing them or have a term that is equivalent in concept and content. Thank you, Andy.
That shows it shows that there is a lot of enthusiasm. And then I want to talk about movies in general, because I see that in a lot of African countries, there are foreign movies that are dubbed into the indigenous languages. You know, I've had the opportunity to watch some of them, and I see that those who watch those series are so excited. Like, they really, you know, get to relate to the characters and all that. Is this also happening in Kenya?
Yes, it happens a lot. We have, and I'll give you examples without appearing to advertise any of them, really. But there's a lot of localization and dubbing of movies that is happening into Kiswahili. And this has been ongoing. It's an ongoing thing. So I'm not talking about something that happened in the last few years. It's been there for quite some time. Movies, that are Western movies. So they were, you know, acted in different in Western context and scenarios that have gotten a lot of viewership in this part of the world, and therefore, have a proper penetration of this movie into the Swahili speaking world, they have been localized into Kiswahili, and a number of them have subtitles in Kiswahili for those that preferred to do subtitles for some of these. Some have been dubbed into Kiswahili. So we have movies from the West, Europe, America. And then we have movies from the West Africa, especially the Nigerian movies, that tend to resonate quite a bit with people in Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. In fact, I travel across this region and I see Nigerian movies, you know, all over the place in Kiswahili, you know, and it is interesting to see how much viewership they are receiving because they have been localized. And local people can now watch this movie and understand the language because it's now in their own Kiswahili language. So that happens. We also have different mobile apps that have been localized in Kiswahili. Apps about agriculture, there are numerous of them. They have been localized into Kiswahili. And I think it is because of the realization of how popular this language is and how, you know, people are at ease with this particular language and how the understanding is more when all these apps are localized into Kiswahili. It's out of that realization, Adi.
When you talk about apps, it reminded me of language technology, particularly with language learning. And we're seeing a lot of, you know, apps for language learning on the continent. What do you think accounts for these? And is it something that we should kind of delve more into?
I think we need to do that. This is an opportunity, actually, Adi. This is a great, great opportunity for investors to think about, because language learning apps are coming up, and it is it's one of the ways of learning a language easily and having lessons just on your phone or in your tablets. So there are few, and the ones that have been done in Kiswahili are still the basic ones, but there is a lot of development going into that world. And I think, speaking of language technology, this is an area that we need to tell the world to explore and ensure that we have, we have built up this apps in a more extensive and covers more areas and domains in a way that somebody can actually learn Kiswahili from a mobile app, just like we have for people who are learning French. You have, you know, extensive apps for you to learn French, to learn German, to learn Portuguese. We need these apps for learning Kiswahili as well. I know there are a few, but they are not as extensive if you compare them to what we have in the European languages, for example. And I also know that there are online, lessons, recorded online lessons. The apps that we currently have are talking about the general ordinary conversations. You know, how do you greet people in Kiswahili? How do you say, could I have this? How do you ask if you do not know a place, or if you do not know somebody, or if you do not know something? How do you ask this? But I think we need to get from that basic and scale it up. And that is an area that I see as an opportunity that, you know, investors that are working on language technology can probably tap into. And talking about localization, really, some of these areas are areas that investors can tap into. And I can tell you, Adi, this is a great opportunity.
I completely agree with you on that. We have spoken about the reach of Kiswahili and the popularity of the language within the continent and even beyond it, right? And so I just want to know, as per your experience as a Kiswahili translator and editor for several years, what are some of the things that you think that we should consider when localizing the content, product, or service into Kiswahili?
Thank you. Yeah, we can consider a number of things, but I'll stick to the most important. So when you're localizing some of these products and services and even applications, some of the things you need to look out for in Kiswahili, especially if you're localizing into Kiswahili, look out for local equivalents for some of the foreign products and services so that there is a higher level of acceptability. You know, I will identify with a service, I will identify with a product if it is called if the language or if it's a terminology and the concept used to refer to it is a concept I relate with. It's a concept I can actually relate with in the local context. So look out for local equivalents. There is always a way to say something in the local context, okay? And number two, ensure that the content observes some of these, you know, cultural boundaries. In Swahili, you can say something, but there's a polite way of saying them. And Swahili community likes to use, you know, polite language. Sometimes they call them metaphors and stuff like that. But not to complicate anything, you know, just observe cultural boundaries. And then find a qualified translator. You know, Adi, people tend to think that any bilingual or any journalist or anyone who understands the two languages to do the translation. But when you are thinking about localizing and doing accurate, proper, consistent and translation that meets the standards of translation, then you need to look for professional qualified translators, and they are there. You know, there are platforms, and I'm sure, Adi, you know how to find some of them. And then number four, be careful about some of these nuances. You know, nuances makes things sometimes complex and complicated. So you need to check out, and that if there are several shades of a meaning of something, then you are going for the correct shade or the correct or the accurate translation of a concept or something. You know, just as a way of ensuring also that the quality of your output is ultimately good. And then use correct register and terminology, because we have different registers, as we have mentioned earlier on, when we're talking about, you know, different domains of medical or legal or, you know, something. So use the correct register. Adi, for example, I can tell you, if you are to translate the word treatment in the medical domain, in the same word you'd use for treatment in Kiswahili is the same word you'd use for treatment. For example, if I came to you, your office, and the treatment I received wasn't good, is the same word. But if you are using the correct register, then you would have the most appropriate equivalent term for that register. Okay, that makes that then eliminates disambiguity in text. And then identify the country that you are translating for, for example, because sometimes there are country variations. And because there are country variations, you want to ensure that the variant you're using is appropriate for a particular country. For example, Adi, the means of transport in Kenya is called matatu in Swahili, public transport. The means of public transport in Tanzania is called daladala. So if you are talking about, if your text is about transportation, cross-border transportation, and this document is going to be consumed by people in Dar es Salaam or in Tanzania, and then you want to ensure that you're using the correct variation. And then, of course, research. Research, as we have mentioned, one of the reasons Kiswahili has grown this way is because of extensive research that has gone into it. I don't know of how a translator can translate without doing some level of research, because you get something and you want to research, you want to check how has it been translated previously. Do we have some online or digital content that talks about this? Do we have any public mass media, you know, that talks about this, and how do they say it? You know, that research is a way of also ensuring that as you do localization of content and products or even services, you will be doing the correct and rendering the correct, you know, content and concepts for whatever localization that you are doing of product or service or anything. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those perspectives that you shared. I totally agree with you, especially about people getting qualified translators to do whatever job it is that they want to do in African languages. It's so important.
Yes.
Now, I'm thinking about, you know, something that has been talked about in the continent when it comes to language diversity. We've spoken mm-hmm. about the fact that Kiswahili is rich with vocabulary. There are so many concepts that you can translate into. It's spoken in several African countries. It's easy to learn. And so in a continent that is very, very linguistically diverse, there are calls that Kiswahili should be made the continental language, such that it's, you know, it's going to be spoken in every African country, it's going to be taught in every African country, and that would help us to have more unity that we're searching for.
Yeah.
Do you think that would be the case, for instance?
Yes, thank you. And there have been calls of, you know, the United States of Africa, you know, and that call has come with, you know, finding one language that, you know, can unite the entire Africa. And, you know, the call has been, can we make Swahili, you know, the continental language? Now, in a continent that is linguistically diverse as this, language is a source of pride, and language is a source of, you know, is a way of preserving culture and a people's identity. Okay? So I would advocate for, you know, allowing people to also use their local languages and other languages that they feel comfortable to express themselves in, you know. So I wouldn't say that once we make Kiswahili the continental language, which we should, because it will unite us more, it will create more opportunities for us, and it will make us have one voice of Africa, just like, you know, the African Union call of one voice Africa. That would be a good thing. But also, other important languages of Africa should be encouraged to grow. So, for example, people should continue to speak Hausa or Yoruba or, you know, whatever language they were born into and are native of, because that is their identity, that is their pride, and that is their way of preserving their culture. Those languages should continue, because I do think that actually that creates more opportunity even for mentoring translators in some of those languages, because truth be said, we have a certain level of literacy in Africa, but we haven't reached the best literacy level. So there are people who still did not go to school but need information. These people may be speakers of other African languages other than Swahili. And so we cannot disadvantage them accessing information. The best we can do is grow translators, mentor translators in those languages, so that information can still be translated into those languages for greater access. Nobody should be disadvantaged just because they don't speak a particular language in the current world. No. People should be encouraged and allowed to speak and use their native languages if that is the language they are most comfortable in, or because of either not getting formal education or unable to speak other languages, they should be able to still get information in their own languages. So linguistic diversity is a blessing in disguise. It is such a blessing because it creates opportunity for more translators to be, mentored in those particular languages. It creates opportunities for localization into the different languages of Africa, so that language no longer becomes a barrier for access to information, especially in a world that is increasingly getting into global village. We are becoming a global village. So somehow information is gonna be available, but the problem is it could be available in a language that someone else does not. And therefore, that is now an opportunity that we can use to further translation and localization.
Definitely. I also believe it's an opportunity, and especially the point you made about, that we should also allow Kiswahili to be a continental language. I would agree with that, because I see within African countries, even within, at the level of the countries, there are challenges. In Ghana, for instance, where people are saying my language is not, being spoken as much as the other language, is not used so much in the media as much as the other language. And so perhaps having Kiswahili would help us to handle some of these challenges.
That is true, yeah. If we have Kiswahili, then we will not have all this, tribal and those kind of conflicts that are based on, our local language, because then we will be having one language that we all identify with as the African continental language. And that is a huge, huge opportunity. It is huge.
Thank you so much for all the insight you shared, for telling us so much about Kiswahili. I've learned a lot. Do you have any closing remarks to make as we wrap up?
Yeah, thank you so much, Adi. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak to the world through this channel and through this platform. And thank you for the opportunity to speak about Kiswahili and show, the great potential and opportunity that this language presents in the continent of Africa. Thank you for giving me the chance to also highlight, the need to have and the need to focus on, sourcing for qualified translators to do translations, because of the intricacies that translation and localization involves. And thank you, and I hope that we can speak a bit more later, whenever we have time, or whenever there is any opportunity to just speak to you. I am greatly honored to have been your guest today. Thank you. Asante sana kwa kunipatia fursa hii na kwa kunipatia jukwaa hili kulizungumzia swala nzuri sana, swala ambalo linatuhusu sote katika bara la Afrika, swala la lugha ya Kiswahili. Asante. Thank you.
This podcast is supported by Multilingual, your go-to source for language industry news since 1987. We invite you to go to multilingual.com/AfricaLSP to receive a free one-year digital subscription to Multilingual magazine. You can also find this link in the podcast description.